uneducated, so-called educated black preacher. So when your family criticizes you, don't become angry. Accept that. Then try again. If you have a chance to meet that same person again, you might say, hey, last time we were talking, I was kind of nervous and I kept rambling on about this or that. I'd like to learn more about you. If I had the opportunity, would you let me kind of like run that by you again? And then when you do that, you're practicing this dialogue. And you're going to rehearse that dialogue until the next time you meet someone and it comes out right. See? Here's another way that you can help yourself out. You can set aside at least 15 minutes a day to sit quietly by yourself. That's great, man. That's a great suggestion. Just take some time out for you. You want to break those old habits? Sit down, take 15, maybe 20 minutes a day when you got the time. If you're a housewife and the kids are taking a nap or away at school, especially when you're taking the kids to school, all right? You're taking the kids to school. Hubby Bubby's going off to work already, and you're the mommy at home. And right before you get home and think about planning the evening meal, sit down, take 20 minutes. Don't turn on the TV, the radio. You can have prayer or whatever it is, or you can put on some nice quiet music in the background, classical. Not rap, please don't. I don't know who can think listening to rap music. I can't. Mm-mm. Then you take time to appreciate your senses. In other words, what do you smell? What's in your environment? You're sitting down there and you got some air freshener going in the apartment. Then check this out. While you're sitting there quietly, do you like the scent of your own body? Can you catch a subtle aroma of the flowers in the air? Look into the mirror. Do you like what you see? Listen to the sounds around you. Do you see the wonderful things that God has created? Do you hear it? Man. Do you hear the birds in the background? See, I have the Lucy Coleman studio window open. I hear the rustle of cars going down the street because it's early morning. They're on the way to work, just like I'm on my way to work. Birds are singing. Nice cool breeze coming in the window. And for some of you guys, if you're faced with a real big decision, focus upon how the alternatives affect your senses. You're sitting down now and you're quiet. Okay, I got this big. Well, if I do this, see, there's where you're feeling yourself. You're trying to figure out who you are and how you're going to respond in that. Take it easy. Don't be so quick to call up somebody and try to get the answer. Sit down and focus upon you. Now, I know this is the evangelicals don't teach you this. Evangelicals, just go to the Bible and put your hands up and start speaking in tongues. No, you're not going to find out no reality acting a fool. You are not going to do that. I didn't tell you to jump into a hypersensitive mode and rev up your blood pressure about 14 points. What is your mind telling you about the choices that you have to make before you? Do you feel hot or cold when you think about this certain choice? Does your heart rate go up? See, that's God using your conscience and letting you know what's happening there. Are you tense or are you relaxed about certain things? Is there something in your spirit warning you against this particular choice that you are about to make? Brothers, this is some serious content here. Oh, and trust me, these are not the Derek and his wife's words. Just a very few are, because most of this junk they're talking, I'm skipping over. I'm talking to you as a Christian man. This ain't out of their psychological ramblings. As you begin to understand and then to accept this God-given wisdom that he's given you through you being a Christian, through you reading the scriptures, through you communicating with Jesus Christ as Lord and Savior. Now, the inevitable question is, can you trust in the Holy Spirit that he has in you, making you aware of the world that's around you? Are you open to reconsidering the situation? And are you now able to grow from where you are as you break those old habits? Refuse to become bogged down with the negative patterns, because you're going to hear, as I pointed out before, those old messages, those old tapes playing itself back to you, because this, what I'm talking about, is called spiritual maturity and sanctification. Even within the relationship, realize that you are an attractive human being traveling on a path in which God has placed you, and that that path is going to lead you to his perfect will being done in your life. Easy. Very easy. Well, I think it's time for a breathing break, right? It's time for a breathing break, so let's take that right now. Since 30 minutes has come up on us, we've come 30 minutes, and because we need a breathing break before I go into the second half hour. And I got to go into the second half hour because it's ending up this particular section, and it's called When Violence Enters the Picture, because some people have violence in their relationship. And then we're going to go into these 12 lessons for developing intimacy. But in the second 30 minutes, we're going to handle the violence. So I'm going to give you about a minute so that you can go and get a cup of tea, and we'll be back for part two. Don't go nowhere. Be right back. Rewarm my coffee. That's what I had to do. Thank you for joining me. When violence enters the picture. Now you may be saying, come on, John, you're talking to Christians. Ain't no violence going on between no Christians and no marriage. You're talking about people that know God, right? What you talking about this violence for, man? Are you crazy? No, I'm not crazy. I'm not crazy at all. Christians can be some of the most violent people you've ever met in your life. Professing Christians, too, yes. Yes, it can. They'll cuss you out in a minute. Cuss you out. Ooh, and don't mess with stuff that's theirs. Oh, my gosh. Have you ever heard people say, you know, I had to lay down Christ to let him know who I... You know, you didn't have to lay down Christ. Christ never has been in you. But the negative patterns that I've been describing in the first 30 minutes... Sometimes these negative patterns leave emotional scars, but occasionally abusive behavior escalates into physical and emotional violence and leaves an even an uglier mark And you know, a lot of times when you marry people that's been married before and then they're divorced or somebody divorced them and then you marry them, well, sometimes when you jump in bed with them, these scars are all over their body. And I don't mean the scars that you can feel and see, because a lot of these scars are buried underneath the layers of pretense. These people have lied. That's why when you marry them, oh, man, and you're looking at her, ain't she fine? Look at her. She fine, ain't she? Who was she with? She was with the kingpin of the South Side drug thing. What you mean? Well, he gave her the BMW with the skinny tires and the wide 24s or the 32s or whatever they call them, with the leather seats. She had the baddest stereo system that he put in there for her. He used to give her the best Gucci purses and clothes. Telly got caught up in the dope trade business, went to prison. She took his little stash that he had, and she didn't spin it all up now and feeling guilty because he got stabbed to death in prison and she didn't have her man no more. So she went to church and she got saved. I thought she did. It's one of them prosperity hell holes that she got in. Then she met you, Jethro. Nice young man. 3-year college degree. Going on working on your master's in business. She got all that dyed hair out of her head and all them, what do you call them, them wig attachments that she had sewed into her scalp. She had all that. You know, she straightened up, kind of lowered the hemline and kept her breast in right, and so they ain't popping all out. Because, see, she's in church now. But all them scars of being married to the kingpin are right there. And now, here you are, Mr. Biblical, and you're going to make the biblical decisions, and you're going to say, our life is going to be led in this way, darling. All right. You run it down to her. She's in agreement with you. Okay. She says, I can go with that. And then the behavior starts coming out. The origins of this violent behavior may be rooted in abuse that was inflicted in an earlier time. It also could be rooted in the absence of adults to model effective ways of dealing with conflict. But in the case of this model that I've just built, the frustrations and the rage and the disappointments that accumulate in a society of drugs and alcohol and abusive sexual behavior that this sister was all engaged in. But now she done went to church and she's been reformed, right? Yeah, right. I understand. And Jethro, you married it. Let me switch places here, because I think I have to give a little acquiescence to the guys too. Sometimes when you got men who are raised in single parent homes by single mothers, they've been the target of displaced anger directed at their absent fathers. In other words, little Jethro's trying to dress and get ready to go to school, and his mama's walking around saying, hurry up, you lazy, slow sluggard, just like your daddy. Dragging around, looking at him, and then the boy looks up at her with them eyes, look just like his daddy's eyes. Don't be looking at me with your daddy's eyes. I hate you. All this stuff is being fed into the young man's mind. That's where he learns this aggressive behavior in an inappropriate way to deal with conflict and disappointment. Now, Sally, you marry Jethro. Violent men are often themselves victims of other men or women's violence. That knowledge weighs heavily in their minds when we are asked to evaluate a troubled 5-year-old boy named Aaron. I'm going to read the two psychologists' examples here. Listen to this. Aaron, who had been repeatedly beaten by his mother's boyfriend and witnessed her being abused, was referred to these psychologists. As he began to punch girls in the class and to strike his female teacher. Oh, does that sound reasonable to you? Are some of your children going through that right now? See, that's why I like some of the examples in this book, because it's real. Now, I don't agree with psychology, everything in psychology, but the human behavior is psychological. And if you don't believe that, then there's something wrong with you. Though I don't push secular psychology on Christians, because we have a God and a Bible and a Christ who can supersede what the psychiatrists will try to tell you. After looking carefully at this young man Aaron's family history, these people say that they painfully recommended that he would be removed from the presence of the home and placed with a relative in the hopes of breaking the vicious cycle in which an abusive child grows up and becomes an abusive adult. They're right. See, but I like the Hopkins, because they weren't going to put him in. They said, look, let's find somebody in his family we can put him with. Somebody in the family that's not twisted like that. Aaron's only hope, they believe, was to be raised in an environment where he could learned that it was not normal behavior for people to harm each other. Now, are you living with someone like that? Are you living with someone that's come out of that particular background? A violent man is often asserting control in the only way that he knows how, by demonstrating superior physical strength. But his behavior actually reveals the extent of his powerlessness. That's why when I talk to a dude and I say, man, you ain't got no business trying to hit up on somebody. A friend of mine told me, man, I just feel like beating up on somebody. I say, you know what? You're just acquiescing to the fact that you have no power in your life at all. That's what a gang member does when they have to jump on somebody and beat somebody down. I had a dream this morning that my daughter was in junior high, and she came to me and she says, Daddy, some girls came up to me and told me to give them my money. And I said, and what did you do? I said, no. And I said, what did they do? Well, they said that they were going to get me. I said, see, they're powerless, and so they have to take out that powerlessness on you to prove themselves. See, abuse. I even dreamed about it this morning. I don't know why I dreamed that. Some men, unable to contain the emotional storms, struck out at those who would be least likely to destroy them. That's why when you find a man that'll beat his wife, there it is. Martin Luther King, the great African-American leader, wrote and says they beat their wives and their children in order to protest a social injustice. And the tragedy was that none of them understood why the violence exploded, quote unquote. King was right. King was right. And you know what? Some of you that are listening to me have these violent explosions in you. And you're wondering where they come from. I recall I used to go by a dude's house and his wife would cuss him out. Cuss, violent explosions, cuss, street pool hall language. Call this dude all kind of names. I said, man, what is going on here? Tears just came in his eyes. Women who accept the abuse of men, be it physical or emotional, invariably carry their own unresolved conflicts into the relationship. Their esteem is so shot, it often is at the root of the trouble. Some women do not value themselves enough to believe that they deserve better treatment. Now, there's a woman that needs to talk with a stronger Christian woman and say, girl, you need to take a, you know what? I tell a brother, I said, look at you, man. It's your fine self. Come on, man. Come on. And when the brother said, what? What? See, because he ain't feeling it. I said, come on, man. What? What? He's saying ain't nothing to me.